And Mary is my beautiful wife, and I treasure her. And so I'll qualify first. I got 19 months and 12 days of recommitted abstinence, food inventory steps, maintenance, and tradition sponsor currently unavailable, as I have three sponsees, but I'm willing to help anybody get started or help anybody find a sponsor if I can't, if they need help. And see how it really saved my life. It's just that simple. And so I started off in 1960. I was born in Bakersfield. Mary, when she first met me, swore I was from the South. I told her, I don't know, honey. My birth certificate says Bakersfield, California, and it does. But 3 months after I was born, mother moved back across the United States. That was my first trip across the old 66, which Debbie's on right now. That I-40 used to be the old 66. And so at 6 months old, I went across it all the way to South Carolina the first time. And I made it back in 93, but I crossed what crossed over to into California on a jet and done some work, and then it was a little bit while longer. But anyway, my dad was a good man. His name was Bud E. Crumpton. My name is Bud E. Crumpton Jr. I never knew it. He was killed 3 months before I was born in a construction accident on the original grapevine. He had put the first cat tracks in Glen Canyon in 1957. I had one sister born in Flagstaff and one sister born in San Rafael. That's up near San Francisco. And one sister born back in South Carolina. And she was the oldest. And when they first got together, he was stationed at Donelson's Air Force Base in Greenville, South Carolina. That's where he met my mom. And mom was a good lady, too. She was a basketball player, played with Annie Tribble. They won a Texas tournament in 1949. Her and Annie Tribble was the go-to people. Annie Tribble later coached at Clemson and Anderson College, won two national championships at Anderson College. And she was first ever woman's basketball coach at Clemson, South Carolina. And I just always thought Annie was cool. Mom would walk up, she'd say, "Hey, Mary," and they'd start talking. You know, they was raised together. But my daddy was an alcoholic. Good Air Force man, good heavy equipment operator, and drank and was crazy when he drank. And that's the rumors I'm told. I don't know. Because I wasn't there. But mother was a good lady, but she was full-blown schizophrenic. The doctor who treated Sybil in Augusta, Georgia, for 17 personalities or 21 personalities, couldn't help mother. We finally found her help in Georgia from Dr. Trice, and we was able to keep her going until she was 80. And so at 2 years old, my mother had a nervous breakdown. She cut my neck. She thought the Bay of Pigs was fixing to happening. And anybody that's around back then, the Bay of Pigs is when Cuba had the bombs coming in, and JFK said, "Get it out of here." And they got it out of there, saved us from having a nuclear holocaust. And that was a very trying time for a lot of people. But that was the beginning of me realizing that I was in dysfunction, total dysfunction. And at 12 years old, I walked in a room. It was night. I was a pretty good athlete. That was where I excelled, as out on the football field and on the classroom. And before we were supposed to have the night we was having practice, I went in to wake mama up, and she took a whole bottle of pills. So I got her to the hospital, pumped her stomach. That weekend we had a championship game, Lions Club. We won. They made me go play. I picked off a pass on the last play of the games, and we won 13 to like six. You know, and they was driving, but and then everybody was all happy, and I was ready to get back to the hospital. But at 12 years old, I totally knew I was on my own. Had three sisters who didn't give a frig about me. They was busy with their own life. And I can't really blame them because I wasn't no perfect kid. I lied and cheated and steal and did everything I could to get something, you know, that I wanted. And I suffered from the disease of more. I wanted more of anything that made me feel better. And my first addiction was no doubt compulsive eating at a very young age. And my primary disease today is compulsive eating. And I have to treat it that way because I first came in AA when I was 29 years old. Didn't stay at 34, got in a lot of trouble, came back, been sober ever since. Sober ain't got nothing to do with not eating compulsively, because I eat compulsively until I was at least 58. And then I started thinking about it when my heart started bothering me. And I had a heart attack. Maybe it was up in Brentwood, California, and the Hammersley's roosters all over the place up there, wild turkeys and everything, cows. Yeah, we loved it. And Mary fed the cows, and she fed the chickens, and she weeded in the garden. And I worked about 7 days a week, 12 hours in the tunnel every day. And I caught myself trying to straighten my eating out. I was eating them candy bars that says protein. Them things with sugar. I loved it, but I've been in one. But they give me energy wise in that tunnel. But I woke up one morning and Mary was sitting there, and she was not, I get up pretty early, so she was not quiet up yet. The dogs was there bowling and itty bitty. And I said, my chest is bothering me this morning. And I said, I believe I'm having some gas up in my chest and heartburn. And I'm gonna run up there and get some Tums. I run up to about where the store was and didn't stop. I just reached on, called Mary, and I said, I'm going to the hospital. I think I'm having a heart attack. And so I drove myself to the emergency room, walked in the emergency room, and the lady was standing there, and she says, Sonny, what you doing in here with your coveralls on, ready to go to work? And I said, well, ma'am, I think I'm having a heart attack. And shit, they had me butt naked on a gurney in about 2 minutes. And I can't remember the name of that hospital, Kaiser. But that was not the one that accepts my insurance. But they already had me in the back and taking me in. And so they had to take me. And they had me on a machine, giving me a stress test. These doctors didn't know what they were doing, the young doctors. And a real doctor, a real cardiologist walked in. And he says, he looked at the computer they was doing. He said, get him off of that. He's having a heart attack right now. And so they did. And they took me over there. And he come over later and whispered. He said, they're going to try to get you to leave and go to a different hospital. He says, do not let them leave. You probably won't make it to the other hospital. And I didn't let them leave. Let me leave. Eventually, my insurance paid for it anyway. We just took out calling some brothers in Tennessee and getting it straightened out. The next day, we had an ambulance take me down. When I was cutting up with the ladies on the operating table, we was cutting up and having a good time. Doctor walked in and said, y'all having fun, ain't you? He says, now it comes down to the nitty-gritty. He says, it's going to work or it ain't, bud. And I said, well, go for it, brother. And he did, and the stent worked, and I felt better instantly. But I knew I had to do something. And so the first time I came in was 2011. And Ann is the lady who helped me. And I stayed abstinent for 30 days and became a food sponsor. But I just couldn't, get it. I went back out. And there's really no excuse for going back out, so they ain't no need me to make up one. I just started eating compulsively again. And then I came back, I think it was 2021, and this was after the heart attack. And my first sponsor was Gary, and I sponsor him now, but Gary's not here today. But Gary was a good sponsor, and he took me through. We went back through to become a food sponsor again. So I was the second time I went through being a food sponsor. And he got me through that, and then Gary didn't make it. And I was going to meetings over in LA a lot. I really enjoyed the men's meeting over there. And Danny became a sponsor, and what a great sponsor he was. Danny was crazy. And guess what? He met another one just as crazy as he was. We had a good time together. Ruth knows him well. And I guess a lot of y'all know Danny pretty well. But he helped me for a couple years, and I was over on a job in San Francisco, Ain't no excuse. Sugar ball, I ate it. And there it was. That was my second relapse. And then Danny took me back, and we worked together a while longer. But the next time I relapsed, he said, "You're going to find somebody else, but I can't help you." And I hadn't had to tell nobody that yet, but I have told people I'm not sure if I can help them, and it seemed to help them when I said that, and they started doing right. Because for me, what that means is you're gonna have to move on to somebody else because you lost your respect of me, and when you lose your respect to me, I can't help you. And so that's what that's about. It's wasn't good for them, and some people don't understand it, but it's okay. Just as long as I do the deal and do what I need to be doing, everything will be okay. Yeah, so I found Robert G. What a good dude. He's my sponsor now. And I got 19 months, like I said, and 12 days of recommitted abstinence. And it's just the best thing that's ever happened in my life. And CEA is my primary goal today. And I often hear people come in and talk about, "Oh, I've got 40 years and this, that, and the other." And I say, "Okay, that's good luck. I got 31 years, but it don't mean shit in here because compulsive eating kicked my ass four times before I ever got in. In AA, I was stayed after the second time." And so, and I ate, and still I got to visit that beast three times a day, every day. And I got, when I go into a different kind of meeting, a drinking meeting, I got to stay on the other side of the room away from all that shit they got over on the counter. I know. So it's my job to do what I need to be doing. I leave usually right after the end of the meeting when I go to those kind of meetings. But in here, I know I have met a group of people who understand that compulsive eating is a terrible, deadly disease that will kill me if I do not work the tools. And we have a structured and disciplined approach, thank God, a structured and disciplined approach. That's what the book says. That's in the concept. That structured and disciplined approach is to get up, commit my food, make my outreach. I enjoy making my outreach. And make my meetings and try to help another compulsive eater and do the deal, be a service. And I am a service. I secretary the men's meeting. I'm speaker seeker on Friday. And I've done a lot of speaker seeking and a lot of secretary work in LA mostly. And it's great. In the men's meeting, I get a little crazy sometimes. We have a good time in there. And I enjoy all the fellows. And it's a great, great way to do things. And I can't see my time, Mary. Oh, I got 6 more minutes. But anyway, what I was wanting to share about today, that's enough on my sickness. Because, on page 45, it says, lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. That's exactly what this book is about. Its main objective is to enable you to find a power greater than yourselves, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as mental. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. And there, when we first came in back in 89, and it was a different program, that part about God, I didn't want to hear it. I was sick in the head, and I thought God's last name was Dan. I used that like regular, not no more. And thank the Lord I had come to accept that I have a power greater than myself. And my understanding of my power changes all the time. But to me, I come from this universe. I'm going back to this universe. I'm part of this universe. I live in this eternal universe. And when it goes, we all go. Wherever we go. And God, as I understand him, is working in my life today. I do believe in the Holy Spirit. I believe that Holy Spirit is intuition and a power greater than myself that's looking out for me. And I got to believe he's looking out for me. I can't be all caught up in negative crap. That's why it's so important in my tools. It says negative thinking is a huge part of our disease. We are learning one day at a time to abstain from negative thinking. When I can abstain from negative thinking, then I flip over here to this page and it says, and we read this just the other night again. It's the old story, 449, third edition, 417, and the fourth edition about acceptance. It's, I must keep my magical magnifying mind on my acceptance and off of my expectations. For my serenity is directly proportional to my level of acceptance. When I remember this, I can see I have never had it so good. Thank God for CAI. And that is so true. I've never had it so good. And I focus on what I have instead of what I don't have. As long as I can see that magic, because the more I focus on the good increases. And so I don't worry about so focusing on the problem. And when it comes up, I say, hello, how you doing? Problem. You're just a problem. You're not me. We'll deal with you as it comes along. But right now, I've got to finish what I'm doing today, which is calling my sponsor, praying, meditating, abstaining from negative thinking. So that problem can wait until, and usually it'll disappear itself if I give it enough time and just don't respond to it. Lack of power, back at it. Lack of power has always been my dilemma. And compulsive eating has a program that is structured and disciplined and that can work if I choose to work it. Today, I choose to work it. Now, I don't worry about tomorrow. I don't worry about yesterday. I just keep it in today, this 24 hours, because this 24 hours is what we all got. Just glad to be here. Thank you, man.